You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. Good morning. Happy Monday. And here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin. The news never stops, especially in this region of the state. And when I want to get the update, when I want to get the skinny on what's happening in my community, I need stellar journalism, the right reporting, people who win awards for their coverage of everywhere Wisconsin, specifically Milwaukee. And who better to talk about it than the Recombobulation founder himself, Civic Media's political editor and multi-award-winning journalist Dan Schaefer. He comes on the show to make sure we're keeping up with all the news that's happening because, frankly, there's a lot going on and some stories fall through the cracks. That's when Dan picks them up, brings them here, and we talk about it. Welcome back to the show, Dan. Love having you here. What have you brought us that is uniquely southeastern Wisconsin today?
Well, we are getting close to back to school time. Many schools getting back into the classroom right around now. And Milwaukee Public Schools has been dealing with quite a lot. They underwent a leadership change this past year with the new superintendent, Brenda Casilius. And they've also had to deal with a lead crisis in many of the schools where many of the older schools throughout the district have dealt with problems remediating some lead paint, dealing with some other lead and water issues. And it was really a major crisis that ballooned during the last school year. And there was some updates as of late about, you know, addressing this in a number of schools across the district.
Tell us more about the update that did come from MPS on this.
So MPS sent a letter on August 19th to people in the MPS community to just update on the health and safety as we're just a couple weeks before the start of welcoming students back on Tuesday, September 2nd. So they updated on a number of the schools that had to be closed during last school year due to this lead crisis. So they had cleared a number of schools, including Fernwood Montessori School, Golden Meyer School. Both of those were among those that were closed down for part of last school year. So they have cleared 14 schools. And I think, you know, they prioritized the schools that had some of the most glaring issues that prompted some of those closures last year. So they have cleared a number of those. But at the same time, there are still 36 schools that are in progress for dealing with some of that lead remediation, you know, whether it's paint, whether it's in water, a lot of it is in paint for some of the older schools. And so it's still a huge lift for many of these schools and for the MPS school district to be able to address before people can come back and be there safely and not have to worry about some of these issues.
It just seems like a lot to take on. I mean, that it feels like they must have extra staff or extra experts coming through and working on these problems then with so many schools. You can't close down that many schools. The kids have to come in. People have to work.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they've been working with the Milwaukee Health Department on this as well. You know, the health department has taken a lead in some of the lead remediation that we've seen throughout Milwaukee. That was an issue that really came to a head, you know, kind of 8 to 10 years ago in the city, you know, led to the change in the health department, new leadership there. Now a couple leaders removed from that, but I think all schools will have to go through a process to be approved by the Milwaukee Health Department to make sure it is safe. And I think a lot of it is because so many of these schools, you know, Milwaukee's an old city, right? So many of these schools were open before 1950 when, you know, people were still using lead paint in a lot of ways. And so as they, you know, go through the process, it's a very involved scientific process to make sure that you know, that people or places are safe from any of the lead paint or residue that might be on the walls in these places. It's a very involved process, and MPS has estimated that this lead remediation plan is going to cost about $16 million. So, you know, it's obviously a district with a big budget. It's got a huge number of people who attend these schools. It's going to take a lot to deal with this, and it's still ongoing. It's still ongoing at many of these schools, but they're hoping to have as much of it as they possibly have cleared before students are back in the hallways.
When it comes to the funding, I know that there are federal and state mechanisms that can help with this, but I also know that because of where we are right now, a lot of programs are being cut. How does MPS plan on paying for this? Is it coming directly out of their budget, or are they going to seek partnership with other groups to help take care of the cost?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of it is, part of it is, you know, because it comes from the Milwaukee Health Department's budget and what they're doing to assist with the school district as well. But I, from what I understand, a lot of it just is going to kind of come out of the general fund. You know, there was a referendum to increase, you know, property taxes in Milwaukee not long ago to help with some of the other funding concerns that the district had. But, you know, this is obviously a special circumstance and it's not something that people really we're planning for. So it's going to be important for leaders to really take this on and make sure that this is getting adequately taken care of and it's not causing, you know, some sort of long-term financial problems too.
Well, it's definitely something we're going to keep our eye on. I know that Earl Ingram has talked a lot about lead in Milwaukee, and this is something that people are very concerned about, very actually kind of surprised about. And I'm sure you'll keep us updated on everything that's going on here. Dan, I really appreciate you stopping by and giving us the update on what's happening in southeastern Wisconsin. Have a great day, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
That was Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Mr. Dan Schaefer himself, and I truly appreciate him stopping by to share all of these important stories with us. If you want to find out more from Dan, you can subscribe to the Recombobulation Area. It's incredibly affordable and keeps you up to date with what's going on in Wisconsin with award-winning journalism. Or you can go to civicmedia.us/news. There you'll find other articles Dan is working on, including his Recombobulation Minute, which you can download and listen to it whenever, wherever you are, just like all of our shows at civicmedia.us/shows. I'm telling you, our website, incredibly versatile, incredibly informative. So go there, civicmedia.us, to find out more. Stick around, because at 7:06, Pat talks to Selena Heller from Up North News. And at 7:35, he speaks with the Fair Maps Coalition about a bipartisan effort to get rid of gerrymandering in Wisconsin. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's Local Report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 6:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. We're in that unique part of the season where we can talk about baseball, we can talk about football, and we can talk about college games, because sports is happening right now throughout Wisconsin, and people are ready. We always want to check in with our sports reporter, Mike Clemens. He talks to Don Rosen on his show on WRJN every Friday, and I'm here for it.
So I think he's in Green Bay. He's a world traveler. Mike Clemens is joining us, our sports guy at Civic Media and WRJN.
I'm a little groggy this morning because I stayed up and watched that Thursday night football game. They kicked off the season.
Yeah, let's talk about
Philadelphia.
That's because there was an incident in the game I'm going to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the Eagles went on to win 24-20. Good showing for the Cowboys, who, you know, they made this huge trade with the Packers. They gave up their big defensive star, Micah Parsons, to the Packers, but they got Kenny Clark, you know, the veteran defensive lineman from Green Bay, and he played last night. He's wearing the number 95 jersey, and they held the Eagles' running game, Saquon Barkley, to 60 yards, and that's a pretty good game, pretty good night for that. So there was a one-hour rain delay, that lightning in Philadelphia, so they had to stop the game midway through the third quarter. Thing to get over with, like after midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. But at the start of the game, they have the kickoff, and Dallas receives, and a player gets injured. So there's an injury timeout on the field, and the Cowboys are standing around the huddle. Dak Prescott, the quarterback, with the Cowboys in their white jerseys. And all of a sudden, this defensive lineman, Jalen Carter, 314 pounds, guy just wrecks offenses. He was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. It's part of the reason the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year. He wanders over to the Cowboys huddle, and something is said or whatever, and all of a sudden the referee throws a flag and then turns on his microphone and says, 98 is ejected from the game. And Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth from NBC, they're like, what was that? What? I mean, that game hasn't even started yet. So they go back and they replay the tape they've got, and you see Jalen Carter spitting on Dak Prescott, and the loogie landed right on his chest.
You know, and you know, I heard this story this morning, and I first thought, what are these, a bunch of toddlers playing here on the playground? I mean, he's supposed to be grown-up men,
you know,
and they're
Jalen
like toddlers.
Carter was a controversial, I mean, he was going to be number one overall, and then he was in a horrible, tragic, fatal accident as a student at Georgia a few months before the draft, and his stock dropped, as they say, because they questioned his decision making or character or whatever, because he sort of walked away from it. And so whatever the case, and when I was at the Super Bowl last February in New Orleans, they hid him from the press all week long. They claimed he had a cold. He didn't have a cold. They just didn't want him to say something stupid before the game. So I stay up to the bitter end of this thing. And now Jason Garrett used to be the Cowboys head coach, and now he worked for NBC. Well, he knows Dak Prescott, the quarterback. So he's walked along the field and says, Dak, what was that all about? And he goes, you know what? He says, so he told him what happened. So Jason Garrett then calls up to the booth, and NBC, to their credit, they go back and they look at over all the tape. So here's what happens. You see Dak Prescott standing there, wait for this injury timeout. He's got his guys lined up, you know, his offensive linemen. He's looking over their shoulders. He's like, I got to spit. So he spits one over the shoulders of his offensive lineman that lands in the neutral zone between the two huddles, right? Well, Jalen Carter takes offense to that, so he walks back over and returns the loogie, only this time lands it on Prescott. That's the one that the referee saw, and that's why he got ejected from the game.
You know what it reminds me of? That Seinfeld episode with the magic loogie.
Yes, the magic loogie.
Keith Hernandez from the Mets.
They had to slow it down and replay it, but NBC had the tape of it. So this is how the NFL season starts off, as two guys spitting at each other.
The magic loogie. Okay, and we got the Brewers. They're out on the road in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Brewers lost to the Phillies 2-0, so they ended up losing that series 2-1. Freddie Peralta, the starting pitcher for the Brewers, had another great game. He's not allowed a run scored since, like, August 3rd. So he pitched 5 scoreless innings, but the Brewers' bats just could not get going. They left 10 guys on base without scoring. So they lost 2-0 in a shutout. But the Phillies are a good team. A little concern now for the Brewers. They're getting the injury bug again. Shelby Miller is a veteran that they had brought in on a trade, and he felt something go in his elbow, and now he's looking at possible Tommy John surgery for the second time in his career, which means he would be out for a year. He's got to make decisions. He's going to be 35 next month, and it's like, do I want to sit out another year rehab and try and get back in the major leagues at 36 years old, or do I just call it a career? So that's a setback for Pat Murphy and his choices on the mound. And it looks like there's going to be another pitcher that they're putting on the IL today. They wouldn't say who. Somebody getting an MRI. So, but, you know, this Brewers team keeps on finding these young pitchers in their farm leagues that they bring up, and, you know, they've got the best record in baseball. So they should be able to pick up some wins this weekend when they open a series tonight against the Pirates.
Okay, the Packers-Lions game, pregame is 1 o'clock on WRJN this Sunday. Kickoff, 3 o'clock, sponsored locally by Martin Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Union Grove, Lee's Deli, Main Street Bakery, Papa John's, Royal Construction LLC, and the Lanes on 20. Excited. Nice weather, football weather. And we got Mike Clemens, who's going to report to us Monday morning all the details about the game.
I'll have coverage from both coaches and players from both teams on your show first thing Monday morning, Don.
All right, get a nap in before before the game.
Try.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot, my friend.
Thank you, Don.
Big thanks to Mike Clemens for stopping by the Don Rosen Show. Like I said before, he's there every Friday, and if you want to listen to it live, listen to WRJN. And if you're not in the Racine area, you can still listen because you have the Civic Media app. Stick around because after the news, Pat talks to Fairmaps Wisconsin to discuss a bipartisan effort to get rid of gerrymandering in the state, and you don't want to miss this conversation. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUKradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29. Listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. Welcome back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. If you're familiar with civic media, you know that one of the topics we discuss a lot on all of our shows is immigration. The actions being taken by the Trump administration have definite knock-on effects here in Wisconsin. That's why Maggie Dawn sat down with Dr. Melinda Brennan, the executive director of the ACLU of Wisconsin. They talked about how sheriffs across the state are striking deals with ICE and how these agreements are disproportionately affecting black and brown communities here in our area of southeastern Wisconsin, as well as across the country.
I want to bring on my next guest, Dr. Melinda Brennan. Thanks so much for being with me today. So I want to unpeel this onion a little bit because there is so much going on here. And I want people to understand that there is really a spectrum involved here as to how your county's sheriff's department may handle ICE detainer requests. I'm going to speak about Milwaukee County because I was asked back in the date on this is 2017. I had to look at my certification letter to the Department of Justice. I was asked to certify Milwaukee County's compliance with various federal laws relating to detainer requests under the threat that certain funding would be withheld from Milwaukee County. Here's what Milwaukee County does if they get a detainer request. If the person is in our custody, the county may indicate to ICE when that person is going to be released, when there is no longer any Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment compliant reason for that person's continued detainer under state constitutional and federal constitutional law. In other words, the county, and we always have an over, nearly always have a problem with total numbers of folks in our incarceration facilities, be that the community reintegration center or our county jail facility. So they will alert ICE when someone who has a violent criminal record is being released. They will not keep them themselves because we don't have space for it and we can't afford it no matter what the federal government is promising. And Milwaukee County, I advise them very clearly, you could be sued civilly for millions of dollars for unconstitutionally depriving a person of their liberty and freedom because those rights enshrined in our federal and state constitutions are not limited or exclusive to citizens. So I was able to easily certify compliance with all federal laws back in 2017 and did so. Other counties will actually hold people. That's one way, and there is now the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, otherwise known as SCAP, that provides these funds in exchange for violating people's fundamental liberty rights. And then there are the 287G programs, which are named for this very specific federal code provision and has a very formalized training process for sheriff's deputies. They effectively get deputized by immigration enforcement officials and act in your county as if they were federal immigration officials. Now, Dr. Brennan, I want to pause, make sure I've described, I think, what the spectrum is. To me, doors number 2 and 3, so the SCAP funding and the 287G programs, are arguably unconstitutional. What is your thought from the ACLU's perspective?
Well, I will sure tell you that your analysis is correct, and I really appreciate you stepping that out. And I'm sorry, but I don't understand how the federal government can overreach into local communities. And they do so by providing exactly what you said, those SCAP funds, and saying, well, let us hold people in your facility. We'll pay you for doing that. And essentially, you're holding people, especially with this current administration, who clearly does not believe in the rule of law. Who are they going to be holding on these detainers, right? And every time that there's an opt-in to receiving those funds, and every time a sheriff signs one of those agreements that says, yes, we will cooperate with you, that means that the federal government is reaching into our local communities more and more. Either they're providing that cash as an incentive to hold people in facilities that clearly in Wisconsin, and there's been many, many news stories and coverage over this, we don't have the room to do it.
Right.
And so if we don't already have the room to do it and we can't treat people humanely to be able to hold them, you're going to cooperate then with the federal government. And given that the federal government is looking to detain apparently as many people as possible, I don't think that you could call that money anything other than blood money.
Blood money, indeed. I mean, here is a very conceivable scenario where someone who has unpaid parking tickets is picked up, because that can become a misdemeanor. They're in a county jail facility. Their name sounds like someone who may be in the country illegally. ICE issues a detainer request. The person pays the tickets, and now their only federal or any infraction that relates to the continued basis to hold them is the fact that the feds maybe think that this is the person that's here illegally. So now someone who has not committed any sort of crime at all is in, except for the non-payment of parking tickets, is now being detained for God knows how long in a county jail alongside all sorts of folks that have probable cause determinations for varying. So you're being held with criminals. This is sort of the point. It's the concentration camp in Florida. It's CECOT in El Salvador. These are people who, unless they're actually targeting violent criminals, which they say is what's happening as the cover, it's not. You've got folks never committed any sort of crime, as we would understand it, being held indefinitely in county facilities.
That entire conversation is available by going to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Maggie Dawn Show and then find the episode entitled Democracy, Detainers, and Detente. You can download it directly to your device and listen to it anytime, anywhere. Again, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Stick around, because after the news, Brittany gives us the weather and John and Gordy stop by to talk about all the events happening in Madison. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here is what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. If you're hearing that music, you know it's time to talk to Civic Media's meteorologist, Brittany Merlot. As I've said many times, she's a multi-award-winning journalist here at the network, and we talk to her every week about what's going on in the weather and what's going on with the environment as well. And last month, we had historic flooding in Milwaukee and the surrounding areas. She talked to us about the cleanup plan and how to stay safe. She also mentioned an effort through the Red Cross of Wisconsin to gather folks who want to come together to help in times of disaster. And we've got more information for you today, because this isn't just about what happened in August in this part of the state. This is about putting a plan together for all of Wisconsin, because this will happen again. Brittany, I always love having you here. You always have the great information, and today you bring a message from the Red Cross.
Yes, I do. So they put out a notice. They were looking for disaster action team volunteers. And I talked to you about this a few weeks ago, and you know, it's a really cool position where you go right after a natural disaster hits and you're the first ones there giving support, giving blankets after a fire, running that shelter and stuff like that. And it takes time. Those shelters actually stay open for as long as it takes for residents to find alternative housing. So that could be days to weeks. So getting people to staff that is hard. And when I was talking to them, I was talking to the regional communications director for Red Cross of Wisconsin specifically. And I basically asked, why are you doing this? Why do you need more people? Is it because they were pulled to the Milwaukee flood? Are not enough people volunteering? What's going on here? And she said, well, this is sparked by climate change. They are seeing more large scale natural disasters across the country, even here in Wisconsin. And so they want to beef up their team and really, you know, upscale it to plan and prepare for what's coming ahead. Kind of crazy to think about.
Well, actually, to me, Brittany, it kind of makes sense because after the conversations we've been having with you, as well as other people from Milwaukee and Wauwatosa, this seems like because of climate change, this is something we're going to have to get used to because we weren't used to flooding like this in southeastern Wisconsin. So it would make sense that the Red Cross would want to start gathering these groups together because now it's about preparing for next time, right?
It's sad and it's true. And it's a good thing that they are doing that because we're already seeing trends. I mean, NOAA's reporting that southern Wisconsin over the past 40, 50 years has already seen a significantly higher amount of precipitation every single year. They've got little asterisks and stars for the southern half of the state. Like, watch this. They're already increasing. It's only going to get worse. And when I was talking to the DNR, too, they're saying they're expecting more rivers to rise. Of course, so am I, which is going to erode soil and coastlines. I mean, it's going to wash out more roads, bridges, keep inundating sewers and wastewater treatment plants. I mean, we can't always point the finger at wastewater treatment plants because that's a lot of rain coming in all at once, and it's only going to get worse, right? So we're going to see more and more problems as we go on. And I was digging in, too, to like all the stats and stuff from the National Weather Service and NOAA. And over the past 44 years, there have been 63 major weather disasters in Wisconsin that caused over $1 billion in damage. Okay, so that's over 44 years. So you're like, okay, 63. That used to be a yearly average of about 1.5 big events. Mm-hmm. Well, if you break the data down to the last 5 years, now we're trending 5 major events every year in Wisconsin. So, of course, the Red Cross is doing this. They need help because more is going to keep coming. And it's scary to think about because I looked back at the events. What were they? 9 of them were droughts, 5 floods. This didn't include the Milwaukee flood. This went up to 2024. 1 freeze event, 44 severe thunderstorms, which includes tornadoes in there, 4 snowstorms.
So if people want to be a part of these action teams, what do they need to do? Do they need special training? Do they need to have advanced degrees? Are we just talking about regular folks trying to help?
We are just talking about regular folks trying to help. I mean, they said if you could just give hours to a day, to a week, whatever you can give will help them out. It can be as simple as remote work, you know, activating and calling the disaster responders. And then the disaster responders come from all over the place. You could be locally, you could be coming from out of state. They've got a lot of help. When I looked into it, I mean, there are people coming from down south to Milwaukee through the Red Cross to help us. So anyone and everyone can do it. Training is offered. It's online, so you can sit at home and do it. It's flexible and it's free, they said. So why not have that knowledge behind your back, right?
It only seems to make sense that if you want to help, you can do these kinds of things. In fact, I feel like this is something that will become more and more ubiquitous as we go further and further into these natural disasters that are caused by climate change. And I keep saying that because I feel like this isn't about politics. This is about the facts, the science. We just have to accept the fact that climate change and global warming is real. And while we're trying to work on solutions for the long run, right now we have to put our best foot forward, help out where we can. And if you can do that, sign up with the Red Cross today. Brittany, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate your time, your expertise, and all the research you do. You are, as I like to put it, an award-winning journalist.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I thank Brittany Merlot for her time and expertise on this. She's always sharing the good information, things we need to do to prepare ourselves to stay safe in inclement weather, as well as just how to help others, as well as the environment. If you want to find out more about joining a disaster action team, go to redcross.org. And if you're interested in reading Brittany Merlot's stories, go to civicmedia.us/news. There you'll find all of the stories she's working on, as well as the stories that all of our other journalists are working on here at Civic Media. It's all there for you at civicmedia.us/news. Stick around, because after Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is Matinair on Air with me, Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinair. And we'll be catching up with all the news we may have missed over the weekend with Sholly Pittman, who's Civic Media's news director. And then at 10:06, I speak to Thomas Galke of Groundswell Collective on how people power, getting together, organizing, helped get the folks of Walworth County access to better mass transit. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. Have a wonderful Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:29.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.